Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable with the top stories of the week, and we've got a lot to talk about on deck tonight. Gun education in the Montgomery County school system, the Prince George's County youth curfew, Quinta Brunson, Jimmy Kimmel, and the Emmy Awards, and the so-called shopping cart killer Anthony Robinson. Also, singer Jesse Powell and comedian David Arnold pass away. Also, the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. What do Black people really think about that? We're talking about it all with my guests, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Keith Alexander from The Washington Post and Sam P.K. Collins with The Washington Informer. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H. Fisher, W-H-U-R, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Sam, Keith, thanks for joining the conversation.
Harold, thank you for having us.
All right. All right. So let's first and foremost talk about, you know, some of the news that came out last night regarding Montgomery County Public Schools, their new gun education sessions that are starting this week. Bethesda Chevy Chase High School had a gun scare today, really kind of punctuating the need for gun safety conversations. Sam, I'll talk to you. Is this something that every school system should be doing?
I think so. And the reason why it's incredibly important that Montgomery County is doing it is because, unbeknownst to some, Montgomery County has a reputation for, in regards to its precarious relationship between the police department and Black men and Black adolescent males. So being preemptive and engaging students at the school level during these courses seems like a good way to go about preventing what happened at Bethesda Chase High School and other venues. And I think that Montgomery County is looking at holistic ways, or at least attempting to looking at holistic ways to deal with the gun situation. Because as we've seen, and as some people may argue, going at it using the full force of the police doesn't do anybody any good, and neither does standing by. So being preemptive looks like the best course of action, at least for now.
You know, Keith, they're going to be doing this at every high school in the county. And as we know, we had the shooting incident at Magruder High School earlier this week. That was a ghost gun. The County State's Attorney John McCarthy talked about that issue today, about ghost guns and, you know, the whole see something, say something attitude. And, you know, and this is certainly, you know, it's bigger than Montgomery County. We've seen in Prince George's County at Suitland High School, first day of school, two gun arrests there. Your thoughts?
You know, I do think it's great that Montgomery County is addressing this, especially on the high school level. What also just jumps out at me is that what does this mean for juveniles who are arrested? You know, I think this was, once a juvenile is arrested for gun violence or something involving a firearm, that I can see prosecutors now saying, not only is this youth charged with having a weapon, this youth went through the training and knows better, which will actually elevate the charges against the youth, because they should have known better. So I really do think it's a very smart program, but I'm glad it's only on the high school level and not junior high or even elementary.
And I also think it really highlights the reality of what school systems are dealing with. You know, obviously Montgomery County considered, you know, one of the best school systems in the region. Some would say, probably second only to Howard County, affluent. But it also shows that this gun issue can affect any school system, no matter whether it's an affluent system, whether or not it's a system that is challenged. And they're really going to have to to continue to address this. You know, the superintendent, Dr. Monifa McKnight, certainly at the head of this, a letter went out to parents. And they do have an opportunity to opt out, to have their children opt out with their parents' consent. I hope that doesn't happen, guys.
Well, also what jumped out at me, and I'm glad to see this, Harold, and you mentioned this earlier, is that it's also teaching these young people how to deal with conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to, and that's something that like young people are not being taught. They're not getting that at home, that picking up a gun is not the way to deal with conflict. And this is one of the things that's going to be taught in the high school, that there are other ways to resolve conflict. And I'm glad to see that schools are recognizing that these are situations that need to be addressed, and young people need to be taught how to deal with conflict in a productive and a constructive way.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. A lot to talk about today. Right now, of course, we're talking about the gun situation in Montgomery County, the gun sessions that the school system is going to be having. Also, I want to kind of pivot, if I can, to the Prince George's County curfew for teenagers. This was announced last week by County Executive Angela Alsobrooks as a way to address the rise in youth violence, whether it was, you know, guns, robberies, and particularly the carjacking situation. Sam, the thing that I found particularly interesting was during that press conference, the county executive pointed the finger at the court system. She talked about parents, and essentially she was saying, you know, we have to do something. But several members of the county council were saying, yeah, let's do this, but let's do some other things. Sam, your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's all of the above. You know, parents and community members are the first stop. And what we're seeing with the youth is an accumulation of the trauma that our community has experienced since the 80s. We are talking about children coming from homes, and I'm not making generalizations, but we're talking about children coming from homes where at least one parent has served time in the prison system or is under state supervision, where they might be living with a grandparent, where they might be going between homes, or where they might be homeless or having housing insecurity. And this is indicative of the larger socioeconomic issues that are at play. And oftentimes, a lot of these youth are latchkey kids. They might be older siblings. So the family dynamics that are at play are much more different than when I was coming up or when my elders were coming up. So we got to keep that in mind. So when Ms. Alsobrooks and others are asking parents to step in, we have to expand that to community, because the definition of family has changed. And in regards to programming, you know, I would say that in PG County and also in pockets of Montgomery County, I'm talking about Silver Spring and Tacoma Park, Maryland, programming is often lax for kids, young people who are privy or might be privy to conduct some of this negative business. And one more point I want to make about the curfew, people don't seem to understand that these youth are not staying in PG County. They are traveling between D.C., Maryland, and Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have curfew, they're going to cross the border into D.C. in the southeast or wherever. So, you know, it's a good attempt, but we shouldn't stop there.
Yeah. Keith, your thoughts?
I want to get to that one point. What jumped out at me is that Alsobrooks is really just blaming the youth and blaming parents. But what about, what is city council doing? What are elected officials doing in Prince George's County? And that's, I'm like, so what exactly are you doing to offset this? What are at the school programs or job programs? You know, I talked to some young people in Prince George's County about this, and that's what they were saying. They were saying, well, what about finding jobs for us? What about we are too tired when we get home from school to go out because we're working? What about find, you know, programs where we can earn money or grow? Find things to keep these young people in a productive way, as opposed to just telling them that they got to be off the street by a certain time. to me was missing out of all this.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. If you have a comment or question, give us a call. Well, you know, so I think it's really complicated. I don't mean complex. I think it's just plain complicated. An activist in the community in Prince George's County, whom I spoke to last week, he said that a lot of these young people who are committing these crimes, by the time they get to the point where they are committing these crimes, he said they are unparentable, and that they are already there. And he was saying that the parenting skills that struggling parents need, they need help to start early with, you know, with these young people to, you know, to address some of these problems. But because by the time they get to the point where they are buying ghost guns, carjacking and the like, while he didn't necessarily say that they were lost, but he, you know, it didn't help when it doesn't fit the bill that the county executive was saying about where are the parents. But then there, I would also say, and you know, this kind of reminds me of, you know, back in, you know the 90s, where, you know, the county executive said these kids don't need a hug, they need to be held accountable. And I think that mm-hmm. that what is now happening is that, you know, people in the community, particularly in Prince George's County, are sick and tired of being sick and tired, and they want the violence to stop. They want the killing to stop, particularly as it relates to these young people who are, you know, who are committing these crimes. And, you know, they're kind of going from, yeah, they need this holistic thing, to y'all need to lock these kids up because I'm scared. Go ahead.
If I may, repeat offenders, and let's call it like this. Though some of these kids know the system quite well, mm-hmm. they're in and out, and they know the system quite well. And the juvenile detention centers and juvenile justice, they're so focused on rehabilitation, they're not realizing, you know, these kids, and when they're up to 3-4 times in and out of the system, they know the game. Mm-hmm. They know that, oh, I can do this, and I'll be back on the street in 2 weeks. That's the problem.
Yeah, and it gets, like you said, let me say this real quick, then I'll let you speak, Sam. And the reason I said back in the 90s, because, you know, we heard that whole three strikes, you're out kind of thing. But if you've been in and then you're out, then you've been in, you're out, then you're in and then you're out, and then you're in and then you're out. That's four. And, it, you know, people are saying, what's going on in the judicial system?
There's an overdependence on government from my standpoint. And we as a community need to start acting like a community and stop being afraid of these young people. The vocabulary that is being used to describe them and their activities, from the use of the word juvenile to offender, is casting them in a light where we deem them uncontrollable, when in fact we are the ones who made them and we are the ones who created this situation. They were born into this, and we as a community failed them when we did not plan in advance as a collective to create a world in which these young people could thrive. We just came out of COVID, and COVID exacerbated a lot of the gaps that they were experiencing from a very young age. We are talking about an era where on social media, young people are seeing things, and they are being adultified very early and very fast. So the question is, what are we as a community going to do? And I've been around people, even as recent as last weekend, who are doing just that, who are doing their best to expose young people to career opportunities before they get into the streets, and who are and adults who are looking to young people and connecting them with go-go artists and other professionals to help them channel their energy in a positive way. Government is not always the answer. We as a community have to look to ourselves. And I'll stop there.
Okay, let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. James, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I appreciate everything you all are doing. I work in education now, but I did work with at-risk youth years ago in the 90s, and there used to be activities where they could go to. and have something to do. I not to get too religious, but you know, idle time is the devil's workshop. And a lot of times, there were boys and girls clubs, there were rec centers that did teen programs that did teach them skills, or at least try to teach them skills today. For those that weren't into sports, that they had other activities they could try to do. Academic programs, you know, I don't know what happened to a lot of the situations we used to have, because right now, I know the economy has changed with the pandemic, but these are our future. The children are our future, regardless of a lot of mistakes they make. They are going to be the ones running the world in the future, and they still have a chance, but also they do need to be accountable for what actions they do. But we have to have something for them to do positive, more than just not complain, but, you know, keep hearing about the same activities they're doing, actions they're doing. When it does take a village. We need to bring something that they could do. With the all-night basketball program that used to be in PG County. Mm-hmm. And then other activities that they need to have.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, James. Thank you so much. You know, real quick before I go to a break, he makes a good point, because we can talk about, you know, sounding old and everything else, you know, back when I was a kid. But, yeah, I was in church. You know, you did Little League. Your parents kept you so daggone busy with everything, and you had activities in school. You didn't have a lot of the, you know, a lot of the cutting up. But the other thing is, the world has changed. We've got cell phones, access to, you know, adult information. As Sam was saying, adulting young people in ways that may not be appropriate. Yeah. The world has definitely changed. Ronald, calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to you in a bit. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We still have a lot to get to tonight. We're going to talk about the Emmy Awards, particularly this Jimmy Kimmel thing and Quinta Brunson. Also, Queen Elizabeth II passed. What do black folks think about that? Boy, we've got a lot to talk about. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back with this conversation in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. My guests tonight at the Reporters Roundtable are Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Keith Alexander from The Washington Post and Sam P.K. Collins with The Washington Informer. We've got so much to talk about. We're still going to, you know, talk about the Emmys, because some strange stuff happened at the Emmys earlier this week. Also, this so-called shopping cart killer. The suspect, Anthony Robinson, he's a suspected serial killer. We got a whole bunch to talk about, but let me go right back to the phone lines real quick. Ronald, calling from Maryland. Go right ahead, Ronald.
I think you guys got an excellent subject. The youth have just lost their way, but I want y'all to think back. They took away the parents' right to discipline their children. When they said that anytime a child is being abused, if they call the police, they'll arrest the parent now.
Hmm.
So now that they done got out of hand, you want to put it back into the parent's hands and blame it as if it's the community. We lost that a long time ago. And jobs ain't the issue. We're a construction company. We pay $35, $40 an hour. We can't get no kids to come look for a job.
Hmm.
They don't want to work every single day. It's not their money. They just do not want to perform every day and grind. So you guys saying jobs and stuff, that's not the answer.
Yeah. You know, I think Ronald has a point. I know that if I had cut up, I would be in more trouble with my father, God rest his soul, than the police. So, you know, I think you make a really good point, Ronald. Real quick, thanks for your phone call. Let me go to Mike. Mike calling on the line. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing okay.
I'm all right. To me, it's not a lot to do with, like, what you guys are saying, like putting things in perspective, like putting things in the neighborhoods for the kids. The kids is not wanting to do things these days, and it's like starting like at home, and it's like not enough men at home for the kids to have the right guidance or whatever, to have the right upbringing.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like, you know, one of the things I said just a few moments ago, Mike. Yeah. If you have, you know, parents who are all over their kids from day one, you may have one or two that slip through the cracks. But I think that it's, you know, the parenting thing has changed. And as I said, the world has changed, and it's just making things much, much more difficult. But Mike, thank you so much for your phone call. Let me move on to the Emmy Awards and this situation with Jimmy Kimmel and Quinta Brunson. She won an Emmy for Best Writer in a Comedy Series, Abbott Elementary. I love that show. I mean, it's amazing. It is hilarious, and I just can't get over it. But during the awards, Jimmy Kimmel was laying on the stage in front of her, trying to be funny. And she leaned over and said, "Jimmy, you know, wake up." And he gave her the thumbs up, but he stayed there, you know, during her speech. And I want to share this with you. This is what she said after the Emmys during the Q&A when they were interviewing the winners. And then I want you guys to share your thoughts about what happened.
I'm so glad that you won and you got the moment on stage. It was a little bit confusing when Jimmy Kimmel wouldn't get up, and I was wondering what was going through your mind at that moment, and if you have any thoughts on having that happen during your speech.
I don't know. I don't really. I know Jimmy Kimmel, and I don't know. I felt like the bit didn't bother me that much. I don't know what the internet thinks, but I don't know. I know him. Honestly, it was kind of, Jimmy gave me my first like big late night spot and was one of the first people to see Abbott and one of the first people, he Instagram messaged me that he saw this comedy and thought it was one of the greatest comedies of all time. And he was so excited it was going to be on ABC. So I think in that moment, I was just really happy that it was Jimmy up there. I kind of consider him one of the comedy godfathers. I'm a huge fan of Will Arnett. So I was wrapped up in the moment. I don't know. Tomorrow, maybe I'll be mad at him. I'm going to be on his show on Wednesday, so I might punch him in the face. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Keith, Black Twitter gave Jimmy Kimmel the business, said that he disrespected a Black woman. What do you say?
Here's the thing. Quint is not upset about it, so why should we be upset about it? You know, I think the whole, it was a joke, right, that he passed, quote unquote, passed out when she won. He was so, and he was stuck. He's like, well, if I get up, I'm gonna take away the camera away from her. So I'm stuck down here. You know, after what we've seen in terms of people getting assaulted and beaten up on the war show.
when did that happen?
Right. He's like, really? The folk are upset about this? She still won the award. She's not upset. Move on.
Sam, what do you say?
I think, once again, that we got to look at the signs and look at what's happening in Hollywood as far as how our people often have to remain poised in times like this when our achievements get disregarded and lampooned. Jimmy Kimmel, having been that intimate with the project and having seen it at its inception, should have known better that to soil Quinta Brunson's moment. And of course she wasn't going to say it, because once again, when you're navigating those spaces and you're conscious about who you are and how to professionally go through the ranks, you're often cognizant about how you would appear. You don't want to appear as an angry Black man or an angry Black woman. So of course she had to stick to the script. And Jimmy Kimmel, as any white man does in a white constructed paradigm, has the freedom to act the fool whenever and however he wants. So, of course, Quinta Brunson is not going to talk about it. If she is going to talk about it, she'll do it years down the line or maybe months down the line. That's where I stand.
Yeah, well, I didn't see the Emmys. I was watching football, actually. But, you know, when, you know, upon hearing about it, and I really have very, very mixed feelings about it, having seen video of it today, loving the show. Okay. She said that, you know, he kind of gave her first break. Apparently they, you know, they do have a professional relationship. Okay. Things happen at these events, but no matter what happens leading all the way up to the winner getting on stage, and I feel that once the winner, you know, gets on stage, that is the winner's moment. They only get a minute. And at best, I thought it was silly. At worst, I think that he should have, you know, he certainly should have known, he should have known better. That's just not something that I think should have been done. I think her moment was ruined, and I thought it was silly, you know.
It was silly, but here's the thing: if the director had zoomed in on Quinta talking, the audience at home would never have known that Kimmel was still on that floor.
Yeah,
kept on talking, and you know the bottom line is she still got the award. And now people are talking about her even more. So I think there are just bigger issues that we've seen at award shows than this silly man, a wannabe comedian, trying to be funny.
Yeah, and
obviously wasn't funny.
Because I also, you know, think all the way back to the whole Kanye West, Taylor Swift thing. Again,
oh, yeah.
You know, he ruined her moment. And
that was anger in that, right? That was mean spirited.
Yeah, exactly. And I get that too. And that if you're going to be mad, stay in your seat.
That's the same thing there. It you know, there's a time and a place.
Spirited though. I don't think this was mean-spirited.
No, I don't think it was mean-spirited either. I think
it's on the same spectrum.
Yeah, I think it still ruined her moment. But it was a great night for black women of color, because you know Cheryl Lee Ralph, after decades of toiling in the vineyards of entertainment, you know, received an Emmy for Best Supporting Actress. We saw, Lizzo just really, really shining. And, you know, Zendaya, I really do think that this really puts a spotlight on the incredible talents that women of color have.
Long overdue.
Yeah.
Long overdue. Long, long, long overdue. And, you know, when you think about, you know, people like, you know, Marla Gibbs never getting her just due on for the Jeffersons, or Erica Alexander not getting her just due for Living Single, or Jasmine Guy not getting her just due for A Different World. I mean, the list goes on and on. And, you know, it's long overdue. Long overdue.
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. I want to talk about this shopping cart killer situation. The Anthony Robinson, the chief of police in Fairfax County, kind of called him the shopping cart killer when Robinson was arrested and charged with, or not, he hasn't even been charged in Fairfax County as of yet, but he is suspected of killing at least two women in Fairfax County, suspected of killing women in Virginia, a woman in D.C., and even Prince George's County police are now looking at a case. You know, Keith, this is kind
half
of your
dozen.
your wheelhouse. Exactly. Talk to me about, the kind of, reporting and looking at this situation that you've been doing.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking at him connected to a half dozen murders involving women, who, were met. He met them on social, on dating apps.
Mm-hmm.
And he claims that some of these women died of an overdose. And he went out and decided he panicked. This is his defense. He panicked and went out and got a shopping cart and put their bodies in a shopping cart and dumped them behind the hotel where they were staying. And this is simply amazing. So we are now at a half dozen.
Yeah.
The majority of these women are black.
Yeah, except for one.
So far, maybe one. Except for one. So far. And you have this man riding around, walking around, pushing a shopping cart with a woman who obviously is not conscious, and no one, at least six times, and no one has said or did anything about it. And here we're talking now months and years later. This is ridiculous. Simply ridiculous. And it's sad. It's very sad.
Yeah, Sam, your thoughts?
I mean, it's not the first time it's happened, unfortunately, and I know that these cases originally were missing persons cases. And when it comes to that, oftentimes, and it's been documented, law enforcement, when they handle cases like this, bias sets in about how they see the about how they perceive the missing people. So until a pattern is established, each person, case by case, may not be taken seriously on the merit of the severity of their case. And that's oftentimes the reality. We need to keep looking deeper, into how to rectify this. It's all institutional. And once again, as I said in the previous segment, it all, goes to the community. Of course, some tips came in, but as community members, when we see things like a man pushing a shopping cart looking suspicious, it's incumbent upon us to at least report it. And that's
a shopping cart with a woman's body in it.
Yeah.
Definitely. So
do you think, these are, with the exception of one, all of these women were, black women. And I agree with you 100%, Sam, considering, the fact that women, people disappear, all the time. And with the, the homicide rate in this, in this region, I think you made a really important point that you have to establish, a pattern. Because, without that, the five women and indeed perhaps six women now, in question, without the evidence that police have shared about the shopping cart stuff, all six of them could have died and be unconnected. And so, but we saw the situation in Memphis where the the jogger was murdered, and it made national news. Obviously, she was connected to a very, very wealthy family, but she was also white, blonde hair, blue eyes, and we've talked about this issue before. And Sam, there's the rub in a lot of cases where, these women were not well known. And in at least one, one case, the fact that she was missing probably was not, unusual. She may, she was living in, from the underside, I guess, of society.
I was recently on a talk show talking just about this, and we don't know a lot about these women in the background.
Exactly.
But I bet that if you look in their backgrounds, you may find some either arrest or drug activity.
Yeah.
Low income.
Mm-hmm.
These are all of the factors that make women invisible to police.
Mm-hmm.
And to the media. Sadly. If they're black, low income, have an arrest record, have a drug use, maybe prostitution, who knows? These women become invisible, and these are primary targets for men because they know that women, that the police and the media are not going to look for them and not take their stories seriously or their disappearance seriously.
Yeah. I want to talk about this other story. We lost some entertainers over the past week. R&B singer Jesse Powell, he died today at the age of 51. He had the song "You." A while back, I wasn't a fan of that song, but I know a lot of people were.
It was the wedding song of the 90s.
Yeah, and I get it. I get it. I think one of the, and of course, we lost Ramsey Lewis earlier this week, the jazz genius, and it just. I think that was just kind of, shocking because his, his career spanned, decades and decades. I mean, he was truly an icon. I think the death that really surprised and hurt me was comedian David A. Arnold. David A. Arnold. He was on our show last year with filmmaker Jenks Morton. We were talking about fatherhood ahead of Father's Day weekend, and he was coming into his own, Sam, and I'm still devastated.
Yeah,
go ahead, Sam, and then Keith, you can jump in, of course.
A lot of Gen Xers are transitioning way too early for my liking, and I'm noticing the trend. If you look at hip hop and the entertainment industry at large, I notice myself getting older every time one of them transition, and it's a reminder of, taking your health seriously. Even myself as a 30-something, just taking those steps to preserve my life to the best of my ability. But David Arnold's transition definitely hurt me. I respected him as a comedian. I like how he centered his family and how his comedy was very relevant and very down to earth. So I'm definitely going to miss him because I like laughing. So
Yes.
I was, some buddies and I, we were just talking about this morning. Matter of fact, we were just saying it seems like black men, when they get into their 50s, are now having health issues that people in their 80s have, and it is breathtaking to see so many black men in their 50s now having major health issues that is taking a lot of us out of here. And a friend of mine is actually friends with David Arnold. He's a comedian, and he told me that Arnold, I don't know if it's true, but he said Arnold did comedy classes via Zoom and taught wannabe comedians. And apparently Arnold had a heart attack during one of these Zoom classes, which is horrific, which is why he was at home when this happened. He was at home giving a class. And I also noticed that Arnold posted on August 28th one of those videos of him and his daughters trying to get his daughters out of school, fussing at his daughters and his wife. About getting them out of school, and that was on the 28th of August. On January 8th, he's dead. It's just, like you same thing. I'm just like, wow, man, really? 54? Whole life ahead of him, and then, you know, rising up, he had all these shows. He had all these shows left for fall and winter. It's tragic. It's simply tragic. Yeah, so I too was, of all those deaths, that one really hit me the hardest.
Well, I will say that after he made an appearance here a month or so later, I saw him perform at the Baltimore Comedy Factory, and he talked about his struggle with alcohol and substance abuse, and I think it was cocaine, and, you know, talked about, you know, how his wife, you know, saved his life and he made the change. And he also talked about living a healthier life. And I think to that, you know, I think to that point, you know, that you're, that both of you are making about, you know, guys in their 50s needing to really take care of themselves. And he was telling the audience, particularly the men, to take care of yourself, to exercise, to eat better, not to drink as much. And some, he talked about all of that stuff. And so we certainly don't know, you know, what impact his previous abuse had, you know, on his body at this point. But he looked fantastic. He talked about, you know, exercising and, you know, and the whole bit. So it really is, it's heartbreaking. It really, really is. Let me grab one more.
One thing I've learned is that, you know, you can exercise and you can diet.
Yep.
But if there's damage to the vessels and the heart, for whatever reason, you know, that can't be, a doctor can't notice that sometimes.
Right, exactly.
So you could be very healthy, quote unquote, externally, eating right, exercising, but damage has been done internally. And sadly, sometimes that doesn't manifest itself until it's too late.
Yeah. Let me take a phone call real quick. Lisa, calling from Fairfax. Thanks for calling, Lisa. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. I'm here on panel. I just want to revert back to the serial killer here in Fairfax County.
Suspected serial killer, but yes, go right ahead. Yeah.
Suspected, yes, the suspected serial killer. But more importantly, the difference between women of color and white women. So I'm a woman of color. We're just not, you know, in society, my opinion, important enough for this country to, you know, when we go missing and something happens to us, to be taken
seriously.
Seriously, there it is. Because I watch a lot of court cases and I've seen all of them, you know, the Gabby Petito's, a recent one more, Riley in California. All that stuff is like quick, quick, quick. And then this one guy who murdered that woman, I'm surprised he's living, first of all. But still, you know, he's charged right away. I'm wondering now why this suspected serial killer has not been charged.
Yeah. I think that's a great question, and I suspect that we will know more in the days and weeks to come, because there's just so much attention focused on him from various and sundry jurisdictions. Yeah. But
well,
I think
he has been charged in two.
Yeah.
Has been charged in two. And so I'm sure they're gathering evidence. So once he's charged, he's charged. He can't go anywhere. So
right,
he's been charged.
True.
And so now they're taking their time, get the evidence so they can, you know, add more cases if they need to.
Yeah.
But once they got one, once they got them on one, they can take their time to add additional cases or additional charges.
Okay. Lisa, thank you so much for your phone call. Last topic, and Sam, you said you like to laugh, and we've seen this video go viral on social media. I'd be interested in hearing what you guys have to say about this.
Girl, the queen is dead.
Queen Latifah?
No.
Beyonce?
No.
Janet?
No.
Mary J?
No.
Lauryn Hill?
No.
Toni Braxton?
No.
Diana Ross?
No.
Tracy Ellis Ross?
No.
Monica?
No.
Brandy?
No.
Maya?
No.
Missy?
No.
The Spice Girl?
No.
Alicia?
No.
Ashanti?
No.
Mariah?
No. Girl, the Queen of England.
Adele?
No.
Who the hell are they talking about then?
you know, that is just hilarious. I mean, that is just hilarious by accident. And, you know, there's been wall-to-wall coverage about the passing of Queen Elizabeth II in the UK. And certainly from a news perspective, yes, it's news. It's, you know, it's big news. But for black folks, I, Keith, I'll start with you. I just think, you know, a lot of folks are just, okay.
Well, let me just say this. This is, she was 96, God bless her.
Yeah.
This was somebody's mother. This was somebody's grandmother. This was somebody's great-grandmother, right? And regardless of what you think of her monarchy or her, you know, how she got in power and things that she did while in power, this was still somebody who was loved. And, you know, I'm from the standpoint is, from here, you know, if you don't have anything positive to say, don't say anything at all.
Yeah. So, I think some folks are, you know, a lot of black people are like, they realize that it's a, you know, it's kind of a big deal, but you know, African Americans I just don't think they have a lot of connection, to this. Sam, your thoughts?
African Americans, but there are a lot of Africans, a lot of black folks in England who are weeping.
Oh, and I get that.
No.
Uh-oh,
no,
here we go.
Well, they were caught on CNN in tears.
As a diasporan, you know, what I will say is there's a reason why the three of us are speaking English on this radio program right now.
Mm.
Elizabeth and her family have colonized the world. They said at one point the sun never set on the English Empire. At least once a month, there is a country commemorating its independence from the English Empire. A couple points that I want to make.
Real quick, you got 30 seconds.
When Elizabeth became queen, she was in Kenya, all right, a colony under the English Empire. And during her reign, England, as well as other European powers, stunted the growth of newly independent African nations. As a matter of fact, the Caribbean is still under siege for the most part because of her. So if black people are not celebrating her, it is because of a good reason, and those are the facts.
Yeah. Keith Alexander, Sam P.K. Collins, thank you both for talking to us. Good conversation. I'm sure we'll be chatting again. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, September 14th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.